10 to 18. And that is called the demoniac nature. So here Krishna is further describing the activities and mentality and the qualities of those with demoniac nature. Now he's just given a preliminary description in 7, 8, and 9. And now he's going to go deeper into the topic. Text 10. Kamam ashritya duspuram dambha mana madanvitaha mohagrihid vasad grahan pravartante shuchi vrataha. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. So, the last verse, Krishna said, alpa buddhaya, that these demoniac persons are not very intelligent. So this verse describes why they're not very intelligent. And the principle here is kamam ashritya, that they have taken shelter of lust. This is his basic principle of life. The Mahatma is Daiva Prakriti Ashrita, and here the demon is the Kama Ashritya. So, taking shelter of different things. And what kind of Kama is this? Dushpuram. It's insatiable, in a feverish pitch of lust. I mean, everybody has a little bit of Kama, right? Even religious men who, to have children, there has to be some lust. But here, this is Dushpuram. We will read something from Srila Prabhupada's lectures before we go further. Yeah. Prabhupada mentions the demoniac mentality described here. The demons have no satiation for their lust. They will go on increasing and increasing their insatiable desires for material enjoyment. So when the kama is dushpuram, that means can never be satisfied. Because puram means satisfied or satisfiable. Or satisfaction. And douche means difficult. So it's difficult to satisfy this kind of feverish lust. Prabhupada writes, Alpa Buddhaya, less intelligent. Why has become less intelligent? That is described in this verse, Kamam Ashritya. His basic principle of life is lusty desire, Ashritya. He has taken shelter of principally lusty desire. Our constitutional position is we have to take shelter of somebody, just like a dog. The dog, if he has no shelter, a good master, he has no position. He is a street dog. He has no food. He has no shelter. He is lean and thin and does not know where to go. The constitutional position of the dog is that it must have a good master, then he's happy. Sometimes it is killed by the municipality. Similarly, our position is dog. We must understand it. We cannot live independently. It is not possible. The demoniac persons have no shelter, therefore they are miserable. Then he describes Dambha Mana Madanvita. As we know, Dambha means ostentation, making a false show. And Mana Madanvita means that he's absorbed in his conceit or pride. So Prabhupada says, these asuras, these rascals, they are simply falsely proud. Just like the same example sample of the dog. The dog is very proud, barking, yow, yow, yow. He does not know that I am chained. And Prabhupada starts laughing. He's such a fool that as soon as the master says, come on, so Maya is the master. You rascal, come here. Yes, we are chained. And any time Maya can pull on the chain and let us know who's the real master. As soon as Maya pulls on the chain, they must follow. They have no reason to be proud. Still, they are proud. Krishna has given sunlight, nice breeze, everything, so you can live, breathe. Everything is dependent. We are dependent. Without light, air, rain, water, how can we live? So we are completely dependent. But on account of false prestige, we are thinking that we are free. I am God. I can do anything. This is demoniac attitude. And he says, why has God made the arrangement of sex? There is need, but not dushpuram. Kamasya nindriya priti. Don't use it for sense gratification. Use it to fulfill the real purpose. So these lusty desires, unless you live a very regulated life, then it will be dushpuram. It will never be fulfilled. Always desire, always desire, always desire. So these demons, they accept the shelter of lusty desire, which will never be fulfilled, never be satiated. But those who are devas, godly, their lusty desire is controlled, restricted. Therefore this varnashram, four varnas, four ashrams. This is education, how to control this lusty desire. The more they try to enjoy, the more they get kicked. The business of human life is how to become free from this material encagement. But the demons, instead of becoming free from material entanglement, they become more and more involved. And then Prabhupada gives an example. When you fly a kite, you use a reel to make it go high. You let the string out. Now at the same time, when you bring the kite back, you use the same reel or wheel. So he says, so this wheel, the human form of body, is meant not for prolonging the unclean material life, but now stop it. Now stop it. It is meant for that purpose. Therefore, it is said in Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. So, they are also, Asad Grahan is mentioned here in the verse. Means they are accepting things which are temporary or material. And this has different connotations. One is that a person becomes inclined to follow bogus ideologies. And another one is that such people are obstinate, like a crocodile. Because grahan means to grab. So crocodile, it bites you. And it doesn't let go. It bites in and its jaws are very strong. So the materialists, they grab on, they bite on to the sense gratification and they don't let go. So they're like crocodiles. And pravartante shuchi vrataha. So shuchi vrataha means ashuchi, right? That is actually... the word ashuchi. So it means unclean vows. It means that they behave in some abominable manner. Prabhupada writes, the word asuchi vrataha, unclean vows, is very significant in this connection. Such demoniac people are only attracted by wine, women, gambling, and meat eating. Those are their asuchi, unclean habits. Induced by pride and false prestige, they create some principles of religion which are not approved by the Vedic injunctions. So sometimes this is called Bama Marg, the path of the left hand. Because with the left hand you do everything dirty. So this is Asuchi Vrata. Yeah. Just like they have people, I think, and it's in the... not Dharavesh, but one of these upper sampradayas. They're just like hippies, really. Actually, Dharavesh was used by Prabhupada, and he translates it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as hippie. You know, this upper sampradaya, their whole religion is based upon the statement of Sanatana Goswami when he was released from the jail. When he was talking with the jail keeper, he said, I will go to Mecca and become a Darvish. So they that is their Mahavakya. They think that this is the most important statement of Sanatana Goswami. And so they began a whole religion on that. So you know, when Sanatana Goswami, when he escaped from the prison and he was going through the forest for about a week without eating, and he was already in jail. So by the time he came to Kashi, you know, he had a beard, he was dirty, and long hair. And Chandrasekhar was asked by Mahaprabhu to go and see the Vaishnava outside, and he opened the door and he said, I only see some, you know, Muslim mendicant. And then Mahaprabhu said, oh, yes. And he went out and he embraced Sanatana Goswami. So you know that picture is there. So then Prabhupada mentions that he looked like a Darvish. See? So they started a whole religion on this. And these the people, they also wear beards. They're kind of like Babaji's. They're like the Darvish, or like the higher order of the one of the other Umprasampradayas, the mystics. And they smoke hashish and bong and all these things. They have they wear robes. And they have Vaishnav tilak, but they have the beads of the Muslim beads, these glass beads. And they, in other words, they're kind of like a mix of all different things. And they go from one mela to another. They have different festivals, and then they, you know, bang on drums and they chant some names of the Lord. But they have these, they bring along with them their sadakis, these yoginis, and in which they practice their illicit romantic activities. It's part of their sadhana. So when they go to the mela, then they just swap or switch the sadakis with their friends. And then they, from there, they go on their way to the next mela, and then they swap sadakis at that place. So it's kind of like the basis of the hippie movement, without the electric music. But basically, the hippies, they do the same thing in America and in the West, like at these rainbow gatherings and so forth. That's what they do. They just go there and they swap girlfriends. And they go to the next place, they smoke hashish. So this is Prabhupada saying that these asuchi vrataha, they've taken some vows which are unclean, and they create some principles of religion which are not approved by the Vedas. So there's many false apasampradaya groups now. There's Tota Ramdas, before Mahaprabhu, he was the one who designated 13 groups, and Mahaprabhu also dealt with such persons. And later they began to split up into more groups. Now there are hundreds of such groups. There's a Guru Prasadis, that the men, when they get married, they offer their wife to the Guru. And when the guru enjoys the newly wedded wife, he hands her to the husband as his prasad. So he's called Guru Prasadi. And then there's Shishavilasi. That's a guru that has a lot of young female disciples. And he has illicit sex with them. Sometimes you can see these people, like going, when I go through the airports, I see these men with long saffron robes and long hair, and he has all these young girls following them, and they have saffron on also, and they have their long hair hanging down, and they're very sensual looking, and they're like following him like this. Sometimes I've seen such people. There's another group that states that one should accept one's mother-in-law as guru. How horrible. And yeah, the sin of it is so many. Huh? Oh, and Orissa also. Like you have Nitaigur, Radhesham, Jabahare, Krishna, Hanaram. They're all over now. They're in Vrindavan, they're Orissa. They're at Mahaprabhu's Gambira. They run that place. They're right behind our Krishna Balaram Mandir. They began by Charan Das Baba. He started this Nitaigur, Radhesham. But in other words, it's an insult to Mahaprabhu because they're saying that that Mahaprabhu didn't give the, you know, proper mantra for kirtan. But they say that Hare Krishna mantra is only meant for japa. So they go on. In Vrindavan, every morning at 7, they used to go, a small group of people from that mutt, and go around chanting, Nitaigo Radhesam. Jabba Hare Krishna Hare Ram. Hear them. And there's actually, there's these mutts actually all around there surrounding where I'm staying in Vrindavan also. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a conversation with this Charan Das Baba and convinced him that this was a concoction, it's not proper to chant such mantra. So he defeated him. And then the story goes that 6 months later, this person went crazy and died. But he had some followers that continued, and they were very, very well organized, and they did big, big festivals, and they got a lot of support. So they spread this all around Orissa and in Vrindavan, too. So there's a lot of these upper sampradayas there. So this is something which is being referred to here. I wanted to read something else. And this is an excerpt from a letter of a dying devotee. Well, this is for the next verse. Okay. Yeah, let us read the next verse. Chintam aparimeyam cha pralayantam pashataha Kama paboga parama etavariti nischitaha asha pasha shater badha kama krora parayanaha ihante kama bhogartam anyanyenarta sanchayan. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable, bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger. They secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. So chintam means anxiety, and aparimeyam means like a bottomless pit or immeasurable. Because when one takes shelter of lust, he has so many desires, and therefore he's in anxiety how to fulfill those desires. And so, their resolution, pralayantam upashataha, their resolve is to drown themselves in the ocean of sense gratification up until the last breath. Pralaya means their destruction, their death, and anta at the end. So they take shelter of these kama ashritya until their last breath. And of course, you've heard the story of the king who was told by his minister that the king asked the minister, when is a man free from his lusty desires? And the minister said, it never happens, even up until his last breath. And the king thought, no, that can't be true. So the minister brought him to the house of a dying man and brought him in the room. He asked him, oh, by the way, bring your young, beautiful princess, your daughter with you. So he brought the princess, and then when they were both there, even though the king was there, even though the head minister was there, even though he was on his deathbed, the old man was staring at the beautiful young princess. So after, when they came out from the room, the minister said, did you notice? And the king said, yes, you're right, up until the last breath. That reminds me when I was in London, I was going to someone's house to preach, and I was going out from the subway. and I was walking up this long steps, and coming down there was a like a prostitute. I mean, she was a young girl, attractive, you know, in some sense, half naked. You know, the summer, it was in London. She's walking down these stairs, and she walked down. I was walking up, and there was an old man walking down the stairs, maybe 75 or 80 years old. Very slowly he was walking. But when the girl walked past him, he just went, you know, and he almost fell over. He almost fell down the stairs. I thought I might have to catch the guy because he was just staring at the girl, you know, such a way. And his whole body was like this. He's going to fall over. Looked like, and I thought, oh, the poor guy, he's going to have to catch him, you know. And I was thinking, wow, just like that, you know, that traditional story. And it was like the old man. He was bewildered. So they're kama, pabhoga, parama. Right? They accept that lust and enjoyment is parama. It's supreme. It's the highest goal of life. Eti vat, eti nischitaha. So that is their conviction. That is their conviction. Asha pasha shater badha. Pasha means like rope. And asha means desire. So they have they're bound up, tied up with the ropes of their own desire. Shatayar badha means that hundreds of them have so many desires. So they, with this rope, they hang themselves, just like a man commits suicide. Kama karoda parayana. They're not narayana parayana. They're kama karoda parayana. And they're taking shelter of lust and anger. Ihante kama bhoga artam. Ihante means that they endeavor, steal, or become false witness in order to get what they want. Kama pabhoga kelie artam, right, for the purpose of lust and enjoyment. And anya, anyaya means illegal. Right. Nyaya means legal, and anyaya means not legal. Artha means wealth, and sunshine they get, right? They accumulate. So they do anything illegal just to get money. Just like Prabhupada tells the story of Ajamil, when he was, as you know, he was a nice young Brahmin man, or boy, young man. And he was walking home. He saw some man embracing some Shudrani on the side of the road. And the woman's breasts were visible. So that samskar went very deep into his heart. And then even though he went home to his good wife and children, he was not able to give up this. He was not able to forget this Shudrani. So then he hired her as maidservant in his home with the plan to enjoy with her, which he did. And then gradually he became so mad after this woman that he left his religious wife and his children, and he just went off with this woman. And this woman was demanding so much money from him. And as you know, Brahmins, they usually have no money. So, you know, he had to become like a con man. And he went onto the streets, dressed in very expensive clothes, and he had his cohort, con man, with him. Cohort means like his friend, his associate, in a negative sense. So they went out onto the streets, and then Ajamil, he started looking feverishly on the ground. Oh, alas, alas, where is it? Where is it? I've lost it. And he he would be like this, and then gradually some person would come, and some kind gentleman would say, oh, my dear brother, what have you lost? How can I help you? So I've lost my diamond ring that I purchased for 5 lakhs of rupees. I was planning to give this to my wife, and now I've lost it. Can I find it? Please help me, brother. I said, yes, I'll help you. And then he starts looking around. And then Jamil's cohort, psst, hey, buddy, come here. I need some money quick. I have this diamond ring. I'll sell it to you. And the man says, what? How much? Did you have a diamond ring? He says, oh, this must be the diamond ring. How much is it? I'll sell it to you for 2 lakhs of rupees. And then he said, 5 lakhs minus 2, that's 3. He says, all right, I'll buy it. And he takes out the money, pays him, and he says, oh, I have the ring. He turns around, where is that man? He's gone. Jamil's gone. And then he turns and looks for the other man. He's also gone. So then he brings this ring to the jeweler, and the jeweler tells him, it is just glass. You've been cheated. So Prabhupada told this story. Jamil was doing this. He was a con man. And he was cheating people on the street to get money for this prostitute. And he was a brahmana. So this is one example of this. Such persons who's controlled, kama krodha parayana, controlled by lust, and he does anything, taking any illegal means to get his money. Text 13 up to 15. So now Krishna describes further the activities and mentality of one with demoniac tendency. Idam adya maya labdham imam prapsye manuratham idam astidam api me bhavishyati punardhanam asau maya hata shatrur hanishye chaparanapi ishvroham aham bhogi siddhoham bhalavan sukhi adyo bhijanavanasmi konyosti sadrsho maya yakshe dasyami modishya ityajnana vimohidaha. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So, Maya Labdham means, I've got it, it's mine. Prapsye Manoratham means, I'll get more according to my desire. Bhavishyati punardhanam. In the future, I will get more money. So, a person is either meditating on increasing his money or increasing his bhakti. Well, you have to meditate on increasing something. Here, the commentators have described some extracurricular discussion between this demon and some innocent bystander who's asking him questions. If someone says, you are becoming victorious by the Lord's will, then the demon says, what? How dare you say? I am Ishvara. And how are you Ishvara? Because I am Bhogi, I am the enjoyer, I am perfect and powerful. If you will search for God other than me, you will not find anyone else. If someone asks, why are you the only Ishvara? And he answers, I am rich, wealthy, and I have aristocratic family members. Give up your foolish arguments. Who can compete with me? I will perform sacrifices by my own power, and I will enjoy with the apsaras. I will perform sacrifices by my own power and go to heaven, and I will enjoy with the apsaras there. I will go to heaven and kiss them and enjoy passionately. Ha, 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 ha. Prabhupada also comments, yes. So many things, the same thing. Oh, the same points. He talks about someone has to be hankering, feeling separation like from something. You have to be hankering for something. The demon's hankering for money and sex. And he says that the gopis in Vrindavan are hankering for Krishna. Where is Krishna? How can we meet with Krishna? And he talks about this in one class when he speaks on this verse. He says, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam ba jagadish kamei. These are the bhakti path. The demon is thinking, I've got so much money. I've got so many friends and relatives and family members. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is denying, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. But here, just the opposite. Mahaprabhu says, just the opposite. I don't want any material friends or followers. Neither I want money. Simply I want to serve you. So these are the demoniac propensities. And the very thing can be changed into devotional service, and then we become devotee or demigod. 16. Anika chitta vibranta moha jala samavritaha prasapta kama bhogeshu patantya narakeshu cha. Thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. So again, they have citta. They're perplexed by so many anxieties. And here, mohajal means like a net. They're caught or surrounded by this net of desires and anxieties. Prabhupada writes in the end of the commentary, here, mohajal is very significant. Jal means net, like a fish in a net. They have no way to come out. Prasakta kama bhogeshu means they're super attached to kama and bhoga. And thus, patanti narake shuchao. They fall down into a very dirty hell. Right? Naraka means the place where people cry, or the place of torment. Naraka. And there are many different kinds of hell, but one of the most dirtiest one is the Vaitarani, which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions. So in the fifth canto, chapter 26, text 24, the Vaitarani is described as follows. A person who is born into a responsible family, such as a kshatriya, a member of royalty, or a government servant, but who neglects to execute his prescribed duties according to religious principles, and who thus becomes degraded, falls down at the time of death into the river of hell, known as Vaitarani. This river, which is a moat surrounding hell, is full of ferocious aquatic animals. When a sinful man is thrown into the river Vaitarani, the aquatic animals there immediately begin to eat him, but because of his extremely sinful life, he does not leave his body. He constantly remembers his sinful activities and suffers terribly in that river, which is full of stool, urine, pus, blood, hair, nails, bones, marrow, flesh, and fat. So it's a very dirty place. Prabhupada comments in his purport some of the psychology of the demon. He believes in his own strength, and he does not know that whatever he is gaining is due to his past good deeds. Right? In the last verse it said, Balavan Sukhi. Right? So Prabhupada's echoing the previous verse, how the person thinks he's so powerful and perfect. So he thinks that whatever he has is due to his own strength, not to his past good deeds. So here, it was someone asked yesterday, the demons can perform some good deeds, something in their past life, and they may get some wealth or power because of that. So here, this is confirmed. And he says, and he simply thinks that all his massive wealth is due to his own endeavor. A demoniac person believes in the strength of his personal work, not in the law of karma. According to the law of karma, a man takes his birth in a high family or becomes rich or very well educated or very beautiful because of good work in the past. The demoniac think that all these things are accidental and due to the strength of one's personal ability. They do not sense any arrangement behind all the varieties of people, beauty, and education. Then he says, he's written, each demoniac person thinks he can live at the sacrifice of all others. Generally, a demoniac person thinks of himself as the supreme God, and a demoniac preacher tells his followers, why are you seeking God elsewhere? You are all yourselves God. Whatever you like, you can do. Don't believe in God. Throw God away. God is dead. These are the demoniac's preachings. It seems like this commentary is kind of reaching back into other verses, because some of the points are not really in here. And he gives an example of Ravana also, who he wanted to make a staircase to Swarga by his own strength, not by being pious. This is the classic example of the demoniac mentality. 17. Atma sambhavita stabdha dhana mana madanvitaha yajante nama yagyaistai dambhena viripurvakam. Self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige, they sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only, without following any rules or regulations. So atma sambhavita means that I am worshipable. And therefore, they are not humble, but they are stabdha, or impudent. So they become impudent because of atma sambhavita. And dana, mana, madanvitaha. Because of their wealth, they become very proud. It's like in the West, money is everything. If one has money, he's considered very high class. And Prabhupada mentioned that in reference to John Lennon, when he was staying at their estate in England. John Lennon actually invited Prabhupada to stay there. And one night he invited Prabhupada to come into his room and listen to some music that he had just recorded called Cold Turkey. It's a record with Yoko Ono screaming at the top of her lungs. And it's very horrible music. I don't know if you ever heard it, but it's... That was John Lennon. He invited Prabhupada and said, I would like to play this music for you. I'd like to know what you think of it. So he had this reel-to-reel tape recorder, you know, by the window. And he went over to turn it on, but he tried again and again and again. He couldn't turn it on. The thing was somehow broken. And he said, damn it. He cursed under his breath and he kept trying this. Prabhupada looked and he saw that he couldn't turn it on. So Prabhupada said, I have also made a recording. And he said, Shamasundar. He said, I'll play my recording for you. I have also a tape player. So he brought in the machine, and then Prabhupada played his, you know, music for John Lennon. But the point that I wanted to make was that in that room, there was a big photo of John Lennon and Yoko Ono completely naked. So Prabhupada, you know, was disgusted by that. And he thought, just see, such a big person. People, you know, the reporters are coming to him and they're asking him. So many big people are coming to him and asking him for advice and so forth. And here he is standing completely naked with his wife. Like a dog. You know, how disgusting. And so he, so Prabhupada said that he's a big man. He gives opinion to the newspaper reporter. People go and take his opinion about serious subject, and he speaks. And the man is so shameless that he is standing naked. And he's an important man because he has got money. Especially in the Western countries, this is very prominent. If you have got money, then you have got everything. Therefore, they are after money only. They think, if somehow or other I get money, then I get everything. I get respect. I get honor. I get everything. Bring money, somehow or other. Bring money. This is in a conversation in New Vrindavan, 1976. So, Maladeva Vidyabhushan says, he wants big titles and Mahapuja. They perform sacrifices to cheat others. They concoct processes of religion. They concoct deities and mantras. They try to impress others and collect wealth. So here the word Nama Yajna does not mean to chant the holy name, but it means a yajna in name only. A false yajna. So Dambhena Avidipurvaka, because of their pride and false show, therefore they do not follow any proper rules and regulations. Okay. Text 18. Ahankaram balam darpam kamam krodam cha sanshitaha mam atma paradeheshu pradvishanto myasu yakaha. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others. And they blaspheme against the real religion. So again, these very bad qualities. This is actually describing the results of their mentality. Ahankaram, proud, balam darpam, they're proud of their strength. Balam means, I am strong, no one dare defy me, I will smash them. So this means they become angry. Kamam krodam cha sangshitaha. So this anger is meant to do harm, not to do good. The guru's anger is to do good when he's chastising his disciple. So that is not counted here in this word krodha. And the word abhyasuyaka, that they're envious, this is, I think, the main point in this verse. It means that to see the good qualities of sadhus as false, or in those who worship the Lord. And it means, Vishnu Chakravarti says, they envy me by disregarding me. And he says that their envy takes the form of being unable to tolerate another devotee's advancement and seeing only faults despite many good qualities. Atma means the self, para means others, and deheshu means in their bodies. So that's the general meaning. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has described another meaning. His definition is, in the bodies of the Atma Parasadhus, those who have taken, who have realized the Paramatma, those who are Atma Para, like Mat Para, right? So they've understood that the Lord is in everyone's heart. And so the demons are envious of the Lord who is in the heart of the sadhus. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes, they envy me as well as the Vedic literature. They are envious and use improper logic to find fault with the Vedas and with myself. So now their fate is described in the next verse. Oh, yeah. This is, yeah, the next section. Last part of the chapter. So, this verse describes the fate of these demons. Tanaham dvishata kruran sangsareshu naradaman kshipam majasram ashubhan asorish yeva yonishu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. So he's talking about the envious persons, as was described in the last verse, which is the demoniac, which has been described throughout this chapter. Kshipami means I throw. Krishna throws them. Ajasram, forever, into the Ashubhan Yoni, the inauspicious wombs of the Asuris. And he says, Eva, Asurish Yeva Yonishu. So here the word Eva means definitely that they have no hope or no chance to get out from that. Read commentaries. Yeah. Baladeva Vibhushan has written, from this demoniac nature they will never become free. I throw them into demonic, violent species with unlimited material desires, and thus they act in those species according to their nature, and thus by their reactions to their envious deeds they go to hell. Prabhupada writes here that, therefore, in the material existence, we find so many species of life, animals, insects, men, and so on, as all are arranged by the superior power. They are not accidental. As for the demoniac, it is clearly said here that they are perpetually put into the wombs of demons, and thus they continue to be envious, the lowest of mankind. Such demoniac species of men are held to be always full of lust, always violent and hateful, and always unclean. The many kinds of hunters in the jungle are considered to belong to the demoniac species of life. So those are some of the lowest kind of people, humans on the planet, and hunters in the jungle. So Arjuna asks, is there any chance that these people, after many births, will become purified and thus freed? Isn't there any hope? So then Krishna speaks the next verse. Again, the word Eva gives the answer. Asurim yonim apana mudha janmani janmani mama prapyeva konteya tato yantyadamam gatim. Attaining repeated birth among the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. So Krishna's answering, after misusing the human birth, these foolish people take animal births and can't get out. So here Eva means they have no hope, no chance. And then Arjuna says, but Lord, you are Satyasankalpa. Whatever you desire becomes a reality. You can do it. And he says, yes, it's possible for me to do that, but I won't, because there's no seed for this desire within me. Because they're envious. And they actually, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has described that mam aprapyaiva. They don't achieve me or attain me. For example, when I appear as Krishna, demonic people like Kamsa, I still give them liberation, but I am not happy that they only gain liberation and yet don't attain me. But they don't want that. They don't want me. See? So because they don't want Krishna, therefore Krishna doesn't have any desire to change the situation to interfere with their minute independence. Therefore, in the Gitamrita, I said there's no desire in them for this. There's no seed of desire in them. So actually, I changed Baladeva Vidyabhushan's statement based on Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, because I thought it might be a little bit too difficult for ordinary people. And they listen to that, then they would think that, oh, Krishna's not so merciful after all. But actually, Krishna also delivers the demons if they're lucky enough to be killed by them. And just as we saw with Kamsa and Agasura and Shishupal and so on and so forth. And the other avatars, when they kill, like Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, and Ravan and Kumbhakarna, they become, you know, like Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they took birth as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, so they took birth in a very aristocratic, wealthy family. Although they were Rakshasas, but they were like, he was the king of the Rakshasas. And he also was well versed in the Vedas, performed yajñas, was doing puja for Mahadev, and like this. So, but it's just that he was still envious of Krishna, and at least playing the role of such a demon. And it was that envy that didn't allow him to actually attain Krishna consciousness, or to attain a higher goal, or the highest goal. But when Krishna killed them, then finally they just merged into him. They attained the result of what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the result of Jnana Mishra Bhakti, or Sayuja Mukti. Those jnanis who have a little bhakti mixed in, they go to the Brahma Jyoti. So, but Krishna says, so I give that. And he says, I'm not happy that I give only that. I want them to attain me, but what can I do? They don't want that. So I just give them Suyuja. So he just reciprocates with the demons according to what they want. So that's why I made a slight adjustment. Since Gitamrita was like for, you know, kind of popular distribution, I wanted to incorporate the Siddhanta in a simple way without having to explain all these points, you know, which I couldn't have done. But anyway, that's our philosophy. Here Prabhupada also confirms this whole thing here. He says, it is known that God is all-merciful, but here we find that God is never merciful to the demoniac. It is clearly stated that the demoniac people, life after life, are put in the wombs of similar demons, and not achieving the mercy of the Supreme Lord, they go down and down, so that at last they achieve bodies like those of cats and dogs and hogs. It is clearly stated that such demons have practically no chance of receiving the mercy of God at any stage of later life. This is the word Eva, means no hope. So then Baladeva Vidyabhushan continues, and he says, it's clearly established here that atheists are hellish people. He says there's two types of demons. One is a demon, plain demon. And the second is demons that have no chance. And he says, the first one is a demon who by mistake or curse attained demoniac nature and thus kind of opposed Krishna or envied Krishna. It's like Vitrasura or such other persons. Or maybe Jayan Vijay. There's some examples of persons who are Chitraketu. Chitraketu was a devotee, but he ended up as an asura. And he says that such people still have faith in the Vedas and the impersonal feature. Such people, when killed by an incarnation, are purified from their asuric tendencies. This is due to their faith in the Vedas. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura mentions, this is confirmed, this point is confirmed in a shloka from the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, which says that as long as those who envy Krishna do not attain him, They remain in a degraded species of life. This is very clear. Prabhupada also quotes Vedanta Sutra, but he doesn't quote the Sanskrit here. So then Arjuna says, oh, there are so many demonic qualities. How can I give them all up? Krishna says, just give up these three, Arjuna. Kama, Krodha, and Lobha. There are so many demonic qualities. How can I give them up? Just give up these three. They're the root of all of the rest. Chividam narakasyedam dvaram nashanam atmanah kama krodhas tata lobhas tesmat etantrayam tyajyed. There are three gates leading to this hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. So, Baladeva Nibhushan has written that after hearing the previous verse, people are going to want to give up these qualities. But what can they do to accomplish this? And here is described, give up these three gates. So, kama always comes first in the list, if you've noticed. Right? Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, and matsarya. So they come in order. So kama is the root of all of them. So if you can conquer kama, that means you can conquer all of them. When the kama is checked somehow or other, then it becomes krodha, or anger, because the person becomes angry. But if it's unchecked, then it skips over krodha and goes to lobha. Right? If it's unchecked, then it becomes lobha. Right? And then from lobha, then moha, illusion, pride, and finally envy. Like this. So envy is considered a mixture of all of the other five. It's like all rolled up into one ball. And that's why envy is very difficult one to deal with, because it's the combination of lust, anger, greed, illusion, and pride. You can see how Shishupal had all of these qualities because he was envious of Krishna. Shishupal is a prime example. He is the personification of envy. You know, Shishupal was born with three eyes and four arms, and he looked horrible. And his mother just went to throw him in the river. She was disgusted. But there was a voice from the sky, stop! Don't throw him in the river. You keep him. And when that person who will kill him first sees him, these third eye and extra arms will go away. He'll become a normal child. So she had this hope. So she kept the baby Shishupal and fed him her breast milk, you know. And so he grew. And then one day Krishna came to his house. Because they were relatives, actually. I think it was his cousin, if I remember correctly. So Krishna came to see his new cousin, you know. And suddenly the third eye and the arms just disappeared. So the mother was simultaneously relieved and also felt some fear and anxiety that, oh my God, here's the person that's going to kill my child when he's later in life. So she offered her obeisances and she started crying and begging Krishna for mercy. That please, please, spare my child. Be merciful to him. So then Krishna said, all right, I'll be merciful. I'll tolerate 100 insults from your son. And then she thought, oh, all right, very good. So at the time of the Rajasuya Yagya of Maharishi Yudhisthira, Krishna was sitting on the throne and Shishupal was, you know, blaspheming, you know, and he was saying so many things. And you're just a cowherd. Nobody knows what caste you're from. You killed your own uncle and you did so many things. And you, how could anyone worship you? And Krishna was just sitting there counting 96, 97, 98, 99. Ah, so then took out his chakra and 100. And Shishupal was Krishna went and the chakra came and it came right to his neck. And then he thought, oh, he's God. He's actually, I surrender. Oh, too late. This is exactly what happened. So then a soul left the body, and everyone saw this. It went right into Krishna's body. You know, the Pandavas were standing on the side, and Bhima was like, let me at him. You said, no, cool down. Just stay there. Just stay there. And Arjuna had his hand on the Gandiva, you know, and he says, I'll kill him. You just do and say, no, stop. Just wait. You'll ruin the atmosphere of the yagya, you know. So in this way, everything has manifested. Shishupal was killed, and he achieved liberation. Oh, my goodness! Let's just take a pause, man. Mm-hmm. Desire and hatred or envy. But Icha comes first. Yes. Excuse me, I'm just looking around for a minute. Uh-huh. What, in which, 19? Well, it says envious. Those who are envious. Oh, Kuran. Well, Kuran means cruel. I didn't see any other gloss on that word. We can look in the dictionary, but I wanted to try to let's see where it, I'm kind of lost now. Bhagavad Gita. Oh, okay. Where am I going now? Well, yeah, you should pause. When we pause, you should pause. Bloody, raw, cruel, fierce, ferocious, pitiless, harsh, formidable, inauspicious. Said of the first, third, fifth, seventh, ninth, and 11th signs of the zodiac, which is supposed to have malignant influence. Hard, solid, strong, hot, sharp, formidable. Yeah. So that's the meaning. It is quite strong, huh? Doesn't say mischievous. So I guess Prabhupada's being a little kind upon the demons. Kurata means cruelty. Kuratva, yeah. Generally, cruel, being cruel, that is the general. Like Kuradanti means having bloody or cruel teeth. So it can mean kind of like horrible. Kuradrish means evil-eyed. You know? Kuradrishti, a formidable glance or look. Right? Kurabuddhi, cruel-minded. Yeah, cruel. Okay, now we will... My plan was to read How to Conquer. Don't you want to know this? How to conquer these three? Okay. Now we're quoting from the first canto, chapter 9, text 27 in the commentary. As far as salvation is concerned, one has to conquer the principles of lust, anger, unlawful desires, avarice, and bewilderment. To get freedom from anger, one should learn how to forgive. To be free from unlawful desires, one should not make plans. By spiritual culture, one is able to conquer sleep. By tolerance only, one can conquer desires and avarice. By tolerance. Disturbances from various diseases can be avoided by regulated diets. By self-control, one can be free from false hopes, and money can be saved by avoiding undesirable association. By practice of yoga, one can control hunger. And worldliness can be avoided by cultivating the knowledge of impermanence. Dizziness can be conquered by rising up. And false, good, he knows that one. And false arguments can be conquered by factual ascertainment. Right? That's like Tattva Siddhanta. Right? Talkativeness can be avoided by gravity and silence. And by prowess, one can avoid fearfulness. Perfect knowledge can be attained by self-cultivation. One must be free from lust, avarice, anger, dreaming, etc. to actually attain the path of salvation. There's another section from the Bhagavatam which describes a similar thing. They were talking from now, I'm reading from the 7th canto, chapter 15. Starting from text 22, there's four texts, 22 to 25, and they all describe conquering the enemies of the soul. 7:15, 22 to 25. Okay, listen, please. By making plans with determination, one should give up lusty desires for sense gratification. Similarly, by giving up envy, one should conquer anger. By discussing the disadvantages of accumulating wealth, one should give up greed. And by discussing the truth, one should give up fear. Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has suggested how one can conquer lusty desires for sense gratification. You want to hear this? One cannot give up thinking of women. For thinking in this way is natural. Even while walking on the street, one will see so many women. However, if one is determined not to live with a woman, even while seeing a woman, he will not become lusty. This is actually interesting. Because one time, Jayadvaita Swami, I was talking with him privately, you know, and he said, yeah, I could understand why people want to enjoy sex. Yeah, there's pleasure there. And I could see, you know, I could imagine myself enjoying sex with a woman, but I could never imagine living with a woman. When I made some face. And so it seems that, you know, even a very advanced sannyasi could, you know, and consider that there's some pleasure, but he could never imagine living with a woman. So in this way, this is one very sure way to conquer sex desire. So he says, if one is determined not to have sex, he can automatically conquer lusty desires. The example given in this regard is that even if one is hungry, if on a particular day he's determined to observe fasting, he can naturally conquer the disturbances of hunger and thirst. If one is determined not to be envious of anyone, he can naturally conquer anger. Similarly, one can give up the desire to accumulate wealth simply by considering how difficult it is to protect the money in one's possession. If one keeps a large amount of cash with him, he is always anxious about keeping it properly. Right? Like Sanatana Goswami and Ishan. And the golden coins, right? Ishan kept one coin. And then Sanat Goswami sent him home. He said, "You're a bad boy, you go home and spend the money in your village." Thus, if one discusses the disadvantages of accumulating wealth, he can naturally give up business. He can give up business without difficulty. Now, 23, the next verse says, "By discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. By serving a great devotee, one can become prideless." By serving a great devotee, one can become prideless. "By keeping silent, one can avoid obstacles on the path of mystic yoga. And simply by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer envy." Gauralila, is this what you're following? You're always keeping silent? Fixed in Bhagavatam. Text 24. By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings from other living entities. By meditation and trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. And by practicing hatha yoga, pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract sufferings due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. Sadhu Sabdham. 25, the last one. One must conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by developing the mode of goodness. And then one must become detached from the mode of goodness by promoting oneself to the Shuddha-Sattva platform. All this can be automatically done if one engages in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. In this way, one can conquer the influence of the modes of nature. Right? So if you have full devotion and faith in Guru and Krishna, then you don't have to kind of, you know, try to augment or support your practice. Because the faith and devotion and bhakti, that's sufficient to bring everything. But those who don't have full faith and full devotion, who are maybe on the Kanishtha platform, then they can always use these different things to support themselves, to augment their treatment. This is explained also. So if one has faith in the Guru, he can conquer the influence of the modes of nature. Because if one is pure-hearted and has full faith, then he's pleasing the Guru, then the Lord is pleased, and he gets the mercy of them, and then they bring him up to the transcendental platform. So everything's there in bhakti. The problem is that we don't have so much bhakti. So we can increase our bhakti, then everything will come naturally, automatically. But until that time, you know, we can support it with these other things. These things are just secondary, like varnashram. You know, we also take a little help from the varnashram system. And so we can also take some help from Gyan Yoga or just dharma in religious practices. These things help us. I wrote about this in great detail in my book. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that, you know, if the accidental path, the path of mercy, doesn't just fall on you, then the other path is needed. So if one doesn't get the mercy of Guru and Krishna through faith and devotion, then the other path of the usual path of practicing, you know, morality and sense control and all of these other things, then those things are necessary. Okay, last two verses. Etervimukta Kaunteya Tamodvara Stribhir Naraha Acharatyatmana Shreyas Tato Yati Param Gatim The man who has escaped these three gates of hell, O son of Kunti, performs acts conducive to self-realization and thus gradually attains the supreme destination. So this is the fruit of giving up the three gates. Prabhupada writes in his purport. And this is right on the topic which we just left. One should be very careful of these three enemies to human life, lust, anger, and greed. The more a person is freed from lust, anger, and greed, the more his existence becomes pure. Then he can follow the rules and regulations enjoined in the Vedic literature. By following the regular principles of human life, one can gradually raise himself to the platform of spiritual realization. So that's what we were just discussing, the regular principles of human life. If one is so fortunate, by such practice, to rise to the platform of Krishna consciousness, see, that comes only through sadhusanga, then success is guaranteed for him. In the Vedic literature, the ways of action and reaction are prescribed to enable one to come to the stage of purification. The whole method is based on giving up lust, greed, and anger. By cultivating knowledge of this process, one can be elevated to the highest position of self-realization. This self-realization is perfected in devotional service. In that devotional service, the liberation of the conditioned soul is guaranteed. Therefore, according to the Vedic system, there are instituted the four orders of life and the four statuses of life, called the caste system and the spiritual order system. There are different rules and regulations for different castes or divisions of society, and if a person is able to follow them, he will be automatically raised to the highest platform of spiritual realization. Then he can have liberation without a doubt. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has written that to be devoted to Bhagavan is most auspicious. Thus Krishna speaks this shloka. Only theists are sadhus, and they attain the supreme destination. Those who are atheists go to hell. This is the essence of this chapter. And that was his last comment on this chapter, so he gave a summary of the chapter. So, you know, being a devotee, that's the most auspicious. And next is following regular principles of human life. Prabhupada gave us both of these because he told us to follow the four regulative principles. Because that's not bhakti, you know, avoiding meat and not gambling and not drinking, right? That's not bhakti. That's not angas of bhakti. Those are what he said, the regular principles enjoined in the Vedic. This is the usual Vedic scenario of like jnana yoga. If you look at the piety in bhakti loka, you'll see, I think it comes under the title of Niyamagraha. If you look in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book, Sri Bhakti Aloka, which is giving light on the path of bhakti, then you'll see in the Niyamagraha section, there's the different, it describes going up and up different levels of religion. So it describes what are the, like, the principles of each, of karma yoga, jnana, and bhakti. Like this. And he said that jnana and bhakti are very similar. You can see that the components are very similar. So he's talking about the vidhi and the nisheda in each system of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. So jnana and bhakti are very similar. I don't have those notes with me or the book with me right now, but I remember this point. So, in other words, if you just add some devotion to jnana yoga, then you get bhakti. Because you have a person who's already controlling the senses, and he's realizing he's not the body, and he's not looking for some sense gratification from his religiosity, his following of dharma is based on something a little higher. So, these things are meant for augmenting our path of bhakti. Bhakti is always glorified as the most powerful process, and we should always have full faith in that. But we should also, you know, doubt our own ability to, you know, perform, not our own ability, but our own adhikar at the present moment, and that we require some assistance to help to support our devotion, so that we, you know, to make sure that we remain fixed in sense control and so forth. So now Krishna concludes the chapter here with two verses. One of them negative and one of them positive. Here's the negative one. Yashastra vidam utsrijya vartate kama karataha dasa siddhim avapnoti nasukhim na param gatim. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. Prabhupada has written in the middle of the first paragraph, in the human form of life, a living entity is expected to be sane and to follow the regulations given for elevating his life to the highest platform. But if he does not follow them, then he degrades himself. But even if he follows the rules and regulations and moral principles, and ultimately does not come to the stage of understanding the Supreme Lord, then all his knowledge becomes spoiled. And even if he accepts the existence of God, if he does not engage himself in the service of the Lord, his attempts are spoiled. Therefore, one should gradually raise himself to the platform of Krishna consciousness and devotional service. It is then and there that he can attain the highest perfectional stage, not otherwise. So that's a very nice summary of the different stages. Baladeva Jibusan has written, only a person with faith in Shastra can get Shreyas. He gets purified by performing religious duty, which comes from Shastra. Therefore, an intelligent person will follow Shastra. He acts according to the Lord's will. Prabhupada has gave a class on this verse. He said, we are not perfect, therefore we have to follow the footprints of the perfect, and that is given in the Shastra, whom you have to follow. We have to understand Bhagavad Gita as Arjuna understood. Then you are in the parampara. And if you understand Gita as some so-called scholar understands, then you are not understanding the Gita. This is the secret. Here we have got so many commentaries on Gita, as one thinks, as if Krishna left Gita to be commented by some rascal to understand. Why? He said Bhagavad Gita clearly. Why is it to be interpreted by some rascals? Did Krishna mean that I leave Bhagavad Gita ambiguous and some learned scholar will come? He will explain. What is this nonsense? Everything is clear. Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning it is said that Dharma Kshetre Kuru Kshetre Samavita Yuyutsava. Now, why should it be interpreted? Dharma Kshetra means this, Kurukshetra means that. Why? It is clear. Kurukshetra still exists. Everyone knows, and that is Dharma Kshetra. Everyone knows. It is not known now. From the Vedic age, Kurukshetra Dharmam Acharit. Still, people go there to perform ritualistic ceremonies. So Kurukshetra is still there, and it is Dharma Kshetra from time immemorial. Why should it be interpreted? Therefore, we are presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is. Therefore, it is being effective. Before me, many Swamis went to the Western countries to preach this Gita. Not a single person became a devotee of Krishna. Not a single person. There is not in the history. And now Gita is being presented as it is. Thousands are becoming devotees of Krishna. This is the secret. People give me credit that, Swamiji, you have done wonderful. Nobody could do it. I am not a wonderful man. Neither do I know anything magic. I have presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. That's all. This is the secret. Anyone can do that. You present the thing as it is. Don't adulterate it. Then it will be accepted. Just like Paramana, kheer. Kheer is very nice food. But if you adulterate it with some grains of sand, it is spoiled. So that was being done. Bhagavad Gita is the science of God, the spiritual science. but it was being adulterated by so many grains of sand, so people could not understand it. We do not present Bhagavad Gita with some adulteration. I'm talking about people giving up the Shastra, right, the meaning of the Shastra. Prabhupada also said in another time, that was in Ahmedabad in 1972, and this one is from Bombay, 1972. Anyone who doesn't care for the instruction given in the Shastra, just like anyone who doesn't care for the law of the state, what kind of man is he? He's a loafer, an outlaw. He's not a respectable citizen. Similarly, anyone who does not follow the Shastric injunctions. Shastras are meant for human being, not for the cats and dogs and hogs. A law is meant for the human being, not for cats and dogs. Therefore, we have to follow the Shastric injunctions. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, or Vyasadeva says in the Puranas, in Vedanta Sutra, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Anadi Bahe Muk Jiva Krishna Bhulya Gela Ateva Krishna Veda Purana Karila. For what? For these Vedas and Puranas are meant? Because we have forgotten Krishna. We have forgotten Krishna. Therefore, to revive our Krishna consciousness, so many Vedic literatures are there. So Shastra Chakshushat, everything we have to take from the Shastra, because we are blind now. Shastra Chakshushat, our Shastra Gyan, because the spiritual master enlightens the disciple with Shastra Gyan, therefore he is spiritual master. If the spiritual master bluffs the disciple, then he is not spiritual master. Bluffing, no. Ajnana timarandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namah. This is guru. Guru means he'll always enlighten the disciple with the light of Shastra. Not that he will say, there is no need of Shastra, I am incarnation. Whatever I speak, you take it. No, this is rascal. You should immediately, who has no reference to Shastra, immediately take him as rascal number one. This is the conclusion. So Prabhupada, this, see, kama karata means a whimsically done according to one's own desires. So he comments on this in this shloka. Because if one gives up Shastra, he has nothing left than kama karata, only his own whims. Word kama karata is very significant. Now I'm reading from the purport, second paragraph. A person who knowingly violates the rules acts in lust. He knows that this is forbidden, but still he acts. This is called acting whimsically. He knows that this should be done, but still he does not do it. Therefore, he is called whimsical. Such persons are destined to be condemned by the Supreme Lord. Such persons cannot have the perfection which is meant for human life. The human life is especially meant for purifying one's existence. And one who does not follow the rules and regulations cannot purify himself, nor can he attain the real stage of happiness. Okay, last verse. So here's some more positive note. Right? So it says that one should end on something sweet. So it's more positive. Tasmat chastram pramanam te karya karya vyavastitau yatva shastra vedanuktam karma kartam iharhasi. One should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. So Baladeva Nibhushan has written that, thus, only Shastra is authoritative in determining correct and incorrect behavior. Shastra's conclusion is to perform bhakti. Knowing this, you'll become qualified to live an active devotional life. Theists attain the supreme destination by faith in the Lord. And the faithless atheist goes to hell. This is the meaning of this chapter. So if we don't accept Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then we're left to just accept our own mind. But that guru, the mind guru, will keep you in the path of birth and death forever. So Shastra both describes acts that bind and acts that liberate. So naturally we avoid A, the first one, and we except B, the second one. Because in the Karmakanda, there are many acts that bind or keep one in the material world. Prabhupada writes, as stated in the 15th chapter, all the rules and regulations of the Vedas are meant for knowing Krishna. If one understands Krishna from the Gita and becomes situated in Krishna consciousness, engaging himself in devotional service, he has reached the highest perfection of knowledge offered by the Vedas. Lord Chaitanya made this process very easy. He asked people simply to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and to engage in devotional service of the Lord, eat the remnants of foodstuffs offered to the deity. One who is directly engaged in all these devotional activities is to be understood as having studied all the Vedas. He has come to the conclusion perfectly. Of course, for the ordinary persons who are not in Krishna consciousness or who are not engaged in devotional service, what is to be done and not to be done must be decided by the injunctions of the Vedas. One should act accordingly, without argument. That is called following the principles of Shastra. Shastra is without the four defects that are visible in the conditioned soul. Imperfect senses, cheating, committing mistakes, and being illusion. These four principal defects in conditioned life disqualify one from putting forth rules and regulations. Therefore, the rules and regulations, as described in the Shastra, being above these defects, are accepted without alteration by all saints, acharyas, and great souls. In India, there are many parties of spiritual understanding, generally classified as two, impersonalist and personalist. Both of them, however, lead their lives according to the principles of the Vedas. Without following the principles of Vedas, one cannot elevate himself to the perfectional stage. One who actually therefore understands the purport of the Shastra is considered fortunate. In human society, aversion to the principles of understanding the Supreme Lord is the cause of all fall downs. That is the greatest offense of human life. Therefore, Maya, the material energy of the Lord, is always giving us trouble in the shape of the threefold miseries. This material energy is constituted of the three modes. One has to raise himself at least to the mode of goodness before the path to understanding the Supreme Lord can be opened. Without raising oneself to the standard of the mode of goodness, one remains in ignorance and passion, which are the cause of demoniac life. Those in the modes of passion and ignorance deride the scriptures, deride the holy men, and deride the proper understanding of the Lord. They disobey the instructions of the spiritual master, and they do not care for the regulations of the scriptures. In spite of hearing the glories of devotional service, they are not attracted. Thus they manufacture their own way of elevation. These are some of the defects of human society which lead to the demoniac status of life. If, however, one is able to be guided by a proper and bona fide spiritual master who can lead one to the path of elevation to the higher stage, then one's life becomes successful. So people are generally suffering because they're influenced by tamas and rajas. And so they're very much affected by all of these bad qualities which Krishna has described in this chapter, the asuri sampat. So therefore, the Shastra gives regulations and dharma, mainly varnashram dharma, and general rules and regulations, as was described in the beginning, that there's these divine qualities, cleanliness, and it was all based on the varnashram dharma. There's certain things that certain persons should concentrate on, and then there are also general things like ahimsa, you know, non-violence, and so many other qualities. Let's just look at them again. For everyone, we had especially arjavam, simplicity, and in truthfulness, freedom from anger, peacefulness, non-enviousness, freedom from greed, being merciful, being gentle, being determined, like this. There are so many things that one can try to develop. And so the general Vedic scenario brings one in this way to pious life, to at least to the mode of goodness. And here, Prabhupada says that one has to raise himself at least to goodness before the path of understanding the Lord can be open. So that's why Prabhupada gave us some basic principles, you know, rising early, being very clean, chanting the holy name. Chanting the holy name is the highest thing, but it automatically helps in all of the other things. So waking early, being clean, and following four regular principles. These are like basic things to help us to chant the holy name. And then we can get more benefit from chanting the holy name. There are other Vaishnava organizations that give Nam Diksha without so much stress on these other things. But Prabhupada, understanding that the effectiveness of the mantra will be hampered by the sinfulness, and so therefore he said that he presented Krishna consciousness in such a way so that it will be most effective. Because otherwise you can chant for a long time and not get very much benefit if you're affected by these lower things. It's like we say starting a fire and pouring water on it at the same time. So in order to make it effective, Prabhupada has created this practice for us. He's instituted both of these things together. And so this is based on Shastra, and therefore it's helpful for us to hear these qualities and to understand them, to understand the demoniac quality, because actually within us we have the demon and we have the devotee both. And there's a kind of tug of war, or struggle, internal struggle going on within ourselves. So, to hear about these demoniac qualities, sometimes we can relate to them very much because we say, "Yes, I'm like that. I'm like that." By hearing the conclusion of this shastra and hearing the commentaries, it will give us strength to actually conquer those things and to focus more on bhakti. Because the more faith and more devotion we have, the more we'll be able to conquer these things and come to goodness and beyond by the strength of bhakti. And that's the best way. Okay, so we'll stop and ask for questions now. Yeah, those are very, you know, very lucky demons. Because, you know, usually demons are not killed by the Lord. Well, that just shows how merciful the Lord is, that he gives someone who's so unqualified, an evil person, the same result as a strict, regulated Brahmavadi, who's a jnani, who's doing bhakti mishra jnana. Right? They're still considered Abhishuddha Buddhaya because they have the Beda Drishti. And that was described in reference to Lord Brahma, or those who go to the planet of Lord Brahma. And this is the drawback in the Jnani who goes to Sayuja. This is described in 325.16. And this was brought up before. Here. This is 17. Okay, where am I going here? Oh, here it is. 16, okay. When one is completely cleansed of the impurities of lust and greed, produced from the false identification of the body as I and bodily possessions as mine, one's mind becomes purified. In that pure state, he transcends the stage of so-called material happiness and distress. The commentary by Prabhupada, he says, "Kama and loba are the seeds of material existence, or the symptoms of material existence. Everyone always desires to possess something." And that is because they have a separate vision from the Lord. So if Lord Brahma has that, then at the end of his life, he enters into Mahavishnu, and then he takes birth again as Brahma. So the Brahmavadis, they have a kind of, they're not one with the Lord completely in their heart. So there's a kind of Beda Drishti also. Although they say everything's one, there's still Anadrita Yushabhanangraya, there's some standoffishness, maybe we could say, from the person not surrendering to the Lord. But they mix in a little bhakti with their jnana, so they go to the place. So the demons, they just kind of they can't progress beyond that point because they're not really surrendered to the Lord. But that's like the highest that he can give them. The highest that they can actually position, that they can maintain, is Sayuja Mukti. And that's above the modes of nature, but it's without any surrender or any love to the Lord. It seems so. I mean, just like Putana. But in her last life, she was the sister of Bali Maharaj. And she was a little bit attracted to Vamana. She was very attracted to Vamana Deva. But then later, when she saw Vamana, how he tied up her brother and sent him to hell, even after he already donated everything that he owned, that he thought that I'll kill him. Like that. So she had these two different ideas. But because of her relationship with Bali, therefore she was given Sarupya and like this as a maidservant in Goloka. And there are other examples. Kamsa got Sarupya Mukti. And there were some other demons that were like related to... Pundraka. So each case was slightly different, but there was always something. Either a relationship with a great devotee or some special feature which somehow moved the Lord to give them something even more. But I haven't seen that, and there's a kind of general rule about that. It just seems according to the individual. Yes, you had a question there in the back? And often there's some background. In what? On Garga Samhita. Yeah, just like there was some person, I forget who it was, he was picking flowers in a garden, and Mahadev came, and then he was actually picking flowers for the deity, Bhagavan Murti. And then because Mahadev had promised Devi that if anyone will come and pick lotuses here, then I'll curse them to become a demon. So it was actually a devotee picking flowers when he got cursed by Mahadev to become a demon. And he ended up in Vraj Leela. But then, of course, the Lord accepted him back. So like someone like that would get Sarupya Mukti, because he didn't actually have like a aversion to the Lord or Beta Drishti. He just made a mistake. He got cursed. So there are like situations like that also, where generally we see that happens. In some cases it was like this. This takes some preparation to present the answer according to, with all the examples. And I have to look into the Garga Samhita demonology. I didn't describe this from Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary. Well, I can at least say that Dhritarashtra and his son, Duryodhana, they were both demigods. Dhritarashtra's name was Bhaga, and Duryodhana was Kali. So, and many of them, they were different demigods just playing a role. That's generally what happens. Although, Shishupal and Dantavakra, or in the other leelas, they're not always giant Vijaya. So they're actually demons, and then Krishna kills them and gives them Suyuja usually. But you know, those who get cursed and or somehow just, you know, by some accident, then they're demons, and but there's some hope for them. But there's other ones, at least according to Baladeva's commentary, said that the other ones have no hope because they're truly envious of the Lord. They like hate Krishna. And the only way that they can get purified is if they enter Krishna Lila, and you know, they're thinking of him always, and then the Lord kills them. And then they can get liberation. But otherwise, they're, you know, tan aham dvishatam kurang sangsareshu naranamam. They're constantly or perpetually condemned. See, there's a difference between the word perpetually and eternally. Because we don't have the idea of eternal damnation, but perpetual means as long as there's a certain circumstance or state of mind, then it will continue on ad infinitum. So, that's why Prabhupada uses this word here, perpetually. I perpetually cast them. Kshipami ajasram ashubhan. Asurshyeva yonishu. This is our Siddhanta. And it makes perfect sense to me, at least. I think for most of you can also agree with this. Not that I can think of right offhand. There are statements that only Krishna's killing gives them liberation. And the Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has commented like that in the Bhagavatam, I believe, as well as in other places, maybe even in the Gita. But and he gives the examples of these six, you know, incarnations of Jaya and Vijaya, that they got some, you know, elevated. They were somewhat elevated in their next lives, but they didn't get liberation. And only when Krishna killed him, they got liberation. So there are statements like that that I've seen, that only Krishna gives liberation. Right. And then he took birth as Kalanimi and then as Kamsa. And before that, he was one of the sons of Marichi. Or he was Marichi. Right? No. Anyway, the sons of Marichi became Kalanimi's sons. Well, that seems like a very plausible reason. It certainly could be one of the reasons why he puts them. I mean, other than the fact that they deserve it, but he may also have that, you know, motive. But I haven't read that anywhere. I haven't heard that, but it's quite possible. Yes. I would agree with such presentation. Yeah, that's true. But then he can also send them back down again. Or when they come to human beings, they could be hunters in the forest, right? And then when they commit all the sins, then back they go. Right? Demons and demons with no hope. So it would take some very special miracle to save such kind of persons, you know. You know, like if they, in the animal species, if they take prasadam, right? Then they could be saved. Then they could get some benefit, huh? Maybe come to a normal human life in the next life. And then the Lord will then, you know, monitor him carefully to see what he will do. Looks like Chaitanya Charman is formulating some deep questions there. So. Let's ask Kinchana Krishna first. Give him more time to formulate his questions.
degraded. They go down to hell.
Those who are born in forest dweller families are forced to act the way they are according to their circumstance. Yeah, good question. Because they're antajas, they're not following any dharma whatsoever. I think that the only way is that if somehow or other, from the kindness of their heart, they help some sadhu or maybe some king or some rishi in the forest. Somehow they do some seva. Then by that, then they would sooner or later get a good birth and then have a chance. It's a good question, actually. But fortunately, you know, rishis and sadhus, they stay in the forest and they could possibly do something for them. If they had some even spark of goodness in their heart or kindness or any good quality that might come and they might get some benefit in that way. And close the door. Sounds like they're having a big kirtan there. It's only with three people. And it sounds as usual. Is the Bhagavad Gita, what's the word? Huh? Oriented to Kali Yuga. Well, this Kali Yuga has already been going on for some 5,000 years or so. So that's a long time. I mean, for us at least, from our standpoint. And persons have been performing karma yoga quite easily, even up until the last few hundred years, I would imagine. And even now in India, people know what is karma yoga. And people from wealthy families, they know, like the, you know, the Hindujas, the Birlas, the Dattas, they, you know, they do give donations and build temples and hospitals and all these things. So they have the idea of karma yoga. So that's the first section of the Gita to do that. And if they have the idea of the Lord, which most of them also do, that is even further development. That would bring us to the verses Atachitam samadhatum nasaknosi maistanam abhyasa yoganatato and further, you know, mad artam karma kum. So to do the work for the Lord or to do some sadhana, something like that. So, I mean, and patram pushpam palam toyam, that's for people in Kali Yuga also. They can scrape up their little bit of devotion in their heart and offer something to the Lord. They may be bereft of, you know, opulence, but at least they can offer something. So, it seems that because Krishna spoke the Gita at the very end of the Dwapara Yuga, so it seems, you know, that we would be foolish to think that it's just an accident. It seems that it must be for Kali Yuga, and I mean, it's unfortunate that people in India still, that even the people in India are not taking the Gita so seriously, at least the major portion of the population. Even when I was preaching in Gujarat in 86, I was studying so many Gita verses to prepare myself for preaching in the college. And then when I started giving lectures, I was quoting verses like left and right, you know, maybe 50 verses in one class or something like that. And then the students were so shocked. They couldn't believe it. And then when I asked them, You know, how many, let's have a show of hands, how many people have read the Bhagavad Gita? Raise your hand. Like 2 people out of 100 raised their hands. You know? It's like, and I did this, okay, maybe at least 50 or 100 times in my preaching in that state. And so very few people actually read the Bhagavad Gita, even read it, what to speak of, studied it. So, it seems it's the situation is kind of turned in a very bad way, probably due to the leadership of the country. But the principles given in the Gita can be very easily applied. And that was the thing that kind of irked Srila Prabhupada, because everything was so simple. And he saw that people weren't doing it, and they were being directed against, you know, accepting or implementing the Gita, the Gita's advice, because of the stupid leaders who are just completely like mudhas, and uncultured people who are introducing Western ideas more and more and more into the country, like abortion, cow killing, and things which are obviously really grossly sinful. So, anyway, I mean, I guess it's debatable. It's debatable. It's subjective, what we're saying, what we're speaking about. But the principles in the Gita are very simple. You know, just to offer at least part of the result of one's work, and then gradually, you know, push start, you know, your soul to perform bhakti yoga. Right, you know, because if someone's doing Nishkam Karma Yoga, then all you have to do is introduce the mantra to him, and get him to offer his food to a picture of the Lord in his home. Then he's already a devotee, you know, more or less, just with some karma mishra bhakti, you know. So, I think that we should have faith that it can be very easily implemented. And that it is for Kali Yuga, but it's just that people are being misled by poor leadership and just go on that basis. Wouldn't you agree, Radha Shyam Prabhu? He's continuing, right? He hasn't given up the principles of Gita, preaching the Gita to the people of Maharashtra just because, right? I think if we, you know, we accept that it can be done, then we'll do it. Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. Huh? How about Chandalopi Dvijashreshtas Hari Bhakti Parayana? Even the Chandalas, they become best of the Brahmins if they perform Hari Bhakti. So in Kali Yuga, there's a lot of Chandalas, Malechas and Chandalas. So if they perform Hari Bhakti, then they can become the best Brahmins. If the Bhagavatam is meant for Kali Yuga, then the Gita certainly is too. Because the Bhagavatam is describing Ananya Bhakti and begins where the Mahabharata left off. And the Bhagavad Gita is the initial principles which are the substratum for the further development in the Bhagavatam. So it certainly can be applied also. I don't know, I don't have any Vedic references that describe the Gita particularly for Kali Yuga. But by the logic, if the Bhagavatam is meant, then the Gita must also be meant. Something else? Yes. Rubies. You're trying to, why not just accept the, you know, the simple statements that people who are sinful in so many specified ways, they go to certain hells. And, you know, whoever, you know, the creatures that are in the river biting the why be concerned about them so much? Obviously, they're there for the same reasons. They committed similar sins. They're all biting each other, you know, in that river. Right? Like creamy bhoja. Creamy bhoja. It's all worms all biting each other, you know. They're having a big bhojan, with creamy bhojan. Yeah, with a K, creamy. So, I don't know. Yamadutas are also sinful, but they're getting some mercy by Yamaraj to engage them in his seva. And this way they get their way out from their sinful life by serving Yamaraj. And the ghosts also that Mahadev accepts, the Buddhas and so forth, they get some elevation from associating with him. But it's sure that the Yamadutas were also very sinful. And it's also sure that whoever's, in whatever creatures are in the hellish planets, biting and causing pain to others, they're also sinful. And the dogs that are on the path leading to, Patala Loka, then they're also sinful living entities. And they're just, they're being utilized to do something, useful by these demigods. The ghosts also come at certain times to disturb those who are sleeping during the sandhyas, because you're not supposed to sleep during the sandhyas. So if you sleep at, 6 o'clock in the morning, then pretty good chance that you'll be harassed by a ghost. And it's just, it's like the law of karma. Everything's in the universe is just kind of structured in that way, and everything fits in. So everyone plays their role, even in hell. I remember that below all the planets is Yamaraja's planet. I vaguely remember reading something like what you're saying. They're like underneath all of the other lower planets. I think that's correct, but I can't remember. My narcology. Okay, we'll stop now. It's very late.